Today is October 21st, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. How are you doing this week, Jeff?
I am doing so great. I'm actually set up in my new office, and it's a beautiful thing.
The aftermath of moving, the beautiful glow that you get to bask in of actually having the new place set up.
Yes. Now, of course, there's boxes piled everywhere, but that's not the point. The point is I have my desk, my computer, everything the way it's supposed to be, which means I should also send out a big thank you to Michael and Leia for being so accommodating during my move, because they were there and just basically gave me their townhouse to have the run of, and I was podcasting from there. They were fantastic.
Thank you, Michael and Leia. We love you.
We do.
So, you know, one of the things I wanted to make sure that we mentioned, I figured this is probably a good place to do it. Let's talk about the deal that we're offering through the Mac Observer for a hotel during Macworld. It's getting to be that time again, you know.
It is. And actually, that's a killer deal. It's the Hotel Milano, which is, what, like a block and a half or so away from the Moscone Center?
Yeah, it's a long block and a half away, but, you know, in San Francisco, you know, you've got the short blocks, you've got the long blocks, and you've got to deal with them. It's definitely pretty close. Yeah, I went and checked out three places, because I'm the closest one to San Francisco, and to see which are the ones that we should work with for this promotion. And, I mean, to be honest, they were all nice, but Milano was definitely nice. And we kind of note this in the website, but one of the reasons why we wanted to go have someone check them out is because the Milano's website doesn't look all that great. They just don't do a very good job of marketing themselves online. But the hotel itself was pretty nice.
So they were investing their money in the hotel and not in the website.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, there's just actually this great. Anyway, Milano has kind of got that modern thing going on. You know, the rooms are all comfortable. They had nice big desks. Some of the rooms have got couches in them, if that matters anything to you. And more importantly, I had my iPhone with me, and I was using that as a airport strength tester.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, and again, all the hotels had pretty strong reception in all the rooms that I checked, but the Milano was definitely three or four bars, and really it was pretty much four bars in every room that I was in. That's, you know, everywhere from the lobby to the two or three rooms. I forget how many I saw at the Milano, but I think I saw three rooms at the Milano, but each room had a very strong signal. That's an important deal for me because I want to make sure that I've got a good connection when I'm there working.
Oh, sure. Yeah, without that connection, we can't get the news out to anyone.
Exactly.
So that's important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the deal that we put together with them that we're doing this promotion for is $154 a night. That's an additional $5 less per night than the discounted rate that you can get through Macworld Expo's website itself.
Oh, wow. That is great.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's really good.
You're not going to be able to retire on those savings, but, you know, you can certainly get a couple extra meals that week, especially if you're staying for the whole show.
Sure. Or maybe go buy an extra accessory for your Mac at the expo.
Yeah. And keep in mind, too, that that rate that's being offered through Macworld, that rate is already discounted. So this is an additional discount off of the IDG discount that Macworld is offering.
Right. And all because we have the greatest listeners and readers.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. So definitely check it out. You can find details at the Mac Observer. We've got the headline. We have got the headline of Friday's headlines, but we also have a link. Looks like on the right side, our new, we have a new layout at the Mac Observer. It's a much better layout than we had previous. And you'll find the Macworld Expo 2008 hotel discount link right on the right side.
And we'll also put it in the show notes, too.
Yeah, of course, we'll have it in the show notes. And Jeff even put together a kick butt map to show you exactly how close it is. Now, you know, for us, I definitely try to keep in mind the fact that my Macworld is not necessarily your Macworld, because I'm working the whole week and you know, quite frankly, it can be tiresome. But for me, being close to the show is very, very convenient, because sometimes I might have to make, you know, even two or God forbid three trips between the show and the hotel, you know, both for meetings and, you know, of course I'm a little bit prone to forgetting things. And
so, really?
So yeah, yeah, really, Jeff. You probably didn't know that. But
I'm totally shocked.
Being close is a good thing, and definitely check it out. It's a good price. There you have it.
There you have it.
All right. And with that, let's get on with the news.
Greenpeace claims Apple's iPhone is toxic, so a California group wants to take Apple to court. A Canadian student is jumping on the Apple lawsuit bandwagon. The iPhone is coming to France. No, really. Apple says third-party iPhone and iPod Touch apps are coming next year, but a 13-year-old found a way to add them now. Leopard launches next week, and Apple dropped the price of iTunes Plus tracks.
The environmental activist group Greenpeace claims it has analyzed the inner workings of Apple's iPhone and found that the popular iPod and smartphone combo holds two types, count them, two types of hazardous materials. The group's investigation claims the handheld contains, quote, toxic brominated compounds, unquote, and, quote, toxic PVC, unquote. Greenpeace claims that it has had an independent lab in the United Kingdom perform a series of tests on 18 internal and external iPhone components, and that it found brominated compounds in about half the samples. It also reported that the
phthalates,
thank you. Yeah, I have a better way of pronouncing that word. Were found in 1.5% of the plastic coating used in the earbud cables. Thank you, Jeff. And Greenpeace Research Laboratory senior scientist Dr. David Centillo commented, two of the phthalates plasticizers found at high levels in the headphone cables are classified in Europe as, quote, toxic to reproduction category 2, unquote, because of their long recognized ability to interfere with sexual development in mammals. End of the longer quote. And the implication apparently is that while having an iPhone may help you get a date, you maybe shouldn't take it with you on the date.
And that same report that slammed Apple also underplayed the fact that the iPhone is completely compliant with European hazardous chemicals regulations. The handheld also falls within Apple's own self-imposed environmental standards. The group's report stated, quote, all components tested appear to be compliant with the requirements of the EU RoHS directive, end quote. It also reported that no traces of cadmium or mercury were found, that lead and chromium were detected, quote, in a small proportion of samples and at relatively low concentrations, end quote, and that there was no evidence of the most toxic form of chromium. The phthalates that Greenpeace was so concerned about have not been banned in the use of mobile phones. And along with complaints about the iPhone's chemical composition, the company also complained that the unit's battery is glued and soldered inside, making it more difficult to separate out components for disposal or recycling.
Now the California-based environmental group Center for Environmental Health is threatening Apple with a lawsuit based on the Greenpeace report. The private organization claims Apple is selling the iPhone in violation of California law, specifically Proposition 65, which requires companies to warn consumers when exposing them to certain levels of specific chemicals. In this case, the Center for Environmental Health claims that the Greenpeace report shows that the iPhone includes phthalate levels that are above the Proposition 65 threshold. The group has given Apple a 60-day notice of the violation, after which it can file a lawsuit against the company. The group is hoping to negotiate a settlement with Apple instead of going to court. In this case, they merely want Apple to agree to recall every iPhone already sold and to post a warning on the packaging for future iPhone sales until the chemicals are completely removed from the product.
And the The lawsuit bandwagon does not end there. A law student in Montreal, Canada, thinks Apple has misled consumers with its iPod storage claims. David Bitone is so mad, in fact, that he filed a class action lawsuit against the company because his iPod Nano holds only 7.45 gigabytes worth of data and not the advertised 8 gigabytes. Mr. Bitone claimed that on average, Apple products offer about 7.5% less storage than is actually advertised. Apple, however, clearly states on its iPod Nano website and product packaging that the device's usable capacity is below the physical capacity. Mr. Bitone doesn't think that's good enough and claimed that many iPod buyers don't understand the difference between advertised and actual storage capacities. He is hoping the court will award him and all iPod owners in Quebec a full refund for their iPods, and barring that, a 7.5% refund.
And in a related story, Mr. Bitone's law professors have flunked him out of school. And they gave him a Chucklehead Award, too, which is funny because that's what we're going to do also. But all right, I'm just kidding. They didn't flunk him out of school, although I bet they're thinking about it. Apple officially announced on Tuesday that Orange, as I like to say, will be the exclusive carrier of the iPhone in France. After all, ending the on-again, off-again, on-again, off-again, on-again, oh, please don't talk to me about it because I'm too special relationship with France Telecom on a happy note. The debut will be November 29th. The iPhone will be available in an 8-gig model for 399 euros, including VAT.
And unlike every other part of the world so far, when Apple's combination iPod and smartphone goes on sale in France, customers will have one option that isn't available in other countries, an unlocked iPhone. The standard locked model will be available just as it is in the U.S., but an unlocked model that can be used on other wireless networks will also be available. The option to purchase an unlocked iPhone is a concession to French law that requires customers have the option to buy a cell phone and use it with the carrier of their choice. In other countries, however, the iPhone will still be sold in its locked-only form.
iPhone and iPod Touch users have been clamoring for Apple-supported third-party applications, and on Wednesday, CEO Steve Jobs finally committed. Mr. Jobs stated in an open letter on the Apple website that his company is, in fact, working on a software developer kit, or SDK, and that it will be available in February. Mr. Jobs stated in the letter, quote, "It will take until February to release an SDK because we're trying to do two diametrically opposed things at once, provide an advanced and open platform to developers while at the same time protect iPhone users from viruses, malware, privacy attacks, etc. This is no easy task." Hey, can I read that as Bill Gates?
Sure.
"It will take until February to release an SDK because we're trying to do two diametrically opposed things at once. Make something that works and make something that we like." All right, I'm just kidding there. "Although developers and users would undoubtedly prefer to have an iPhone SDK and the corresponding applications available right now, the February commitment is still good news. Apple's official endorsement for third-party applications means that once the SDK is available, users won't have to worry about voiding their iPhone or iPod Touch warranties or potentially ruining their handheld device with a software update."
And speaking of iPhone and iPod Touch applications, a 13-year-old that goes by the handle Eric's has managed to produce a simple-to-use jailbreak method for the iPod Touch, and it's called iJailbreak. Eric's hack allows iPod Touch users to install third-party applications on their touch interface iPod and does not require any special skills to use. iJailbreak is, at least for now, limited to Intel-based Macs running macOS 10.4 or higher, and at version 0.2.1, it is still in the early stages of development. Now, once installed, iPod Touch users can add additional applications to their portable media player, much like iPhone users were doing prior to the iPhone 1.1.1 software update. And even though it is possible to install additional apps on the iPod Touch, Apple does not support the process. iJailbreak is free, and it's available for download at the Google Code website.
Apple's highly anticipated macOS 10.5 operating system, or Leopard as it is called, is officially scheduled to launch at 6 p.m. local time on Friday, October 26th. Leopard will include several new features, including Time Machine, which is a built-in automated data backup system, Spaces, a feature that groups applications on different virtual desktops that users can switch between, Quick Look, which lets users see the contents of a document without requiring them to have the creating application, a redesigned Finder with CoverFlow folder browsing, and more. The new version will also include updated versions of iCal, iChat, Mail, and Front Row. macOS 10.5, or Leopard, is available for pre-order at the Apple retail website for $129. 5-user family packs are priced at $199. Customers that purchased a new Macintosh computer on or after October 1st will be able to upgrade to Leopard for $9.95. And I think, you know, Jeff, why don't we put in the show notes a link to Leopard from Apple and a link to Leopard from Amazon, which will have a slight discount.
Oh, great. Yep. I'll make sure that
happens.
There'll
be affiliate links, folks. So if you actually buy them through those affiliate links, you help the Mac Observer, and all that money goes back into the site to pay for people to write stuff for you.
Oh, yeah. So please use those links.
Go.
Okay. And wrapping up the news this week, Apple lowered the price of the DRM-free offerings at the iTunes Store from $1.29 to 99 cents on Wednesday. Along with the price drop, Apple also announced that its iTunes Plus catalog now includes over 2 million tracks, making it the largest legitimate copy protection-free music collection in the world. The price reduction follows the launch of the Amazon MP3 Music Download Store, which offered a wide selection of iPod-compatible copy protection-free songs for 99 cents. The iTunes Store began offering tracks that weren't hampered with digital rights management code earlier this year in a special deal with EMI. iTunes Plus tracks are also encoded at a higher bit rate, which offers listeners better audio quality.
And that means it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And, you know, let's start off with something that we weren't going to talk about, but just because I'm so excited, so I can say huzzah, the whole lowering the price of the non-crippled music.
Okay, yeah, let's start there. That,
hooray!
Yes, that's fantastic, and it's something that I was so glad to see, and I was kind of surprised on one hand that it happened, but not on the other. I was surprised on one hand because Apple was able to apparently convince the record labels that it works with that it's okay to sell the copy protection-free tracks at the lower price.
Well, let's be fair here. I mean, these 2 million tracks, Apple's claiming to be the biggest, you know, have the biggest non-crippled selection anywhere. But, I mean, that's what other sites have been offering recently is 2 million tracks.
Right.
So, you know, Apple, I don't know that Apple did the convincing. Apple blazed the trail with its deal with EMI, but, you know, all the labels actually went to the other services first to offer non-DRM crippled versions of their music. And then Apple finally got it. I think that was probably it was the labels once again thinking that they can do something to make Apple less powerful and then realizing that no one's buying anything from anyone else anyway.
Right. So then they go back to Apple and say, "All right, the deal that we talked about before, it sounds good now."
Exactly, exactly. But it's good news. I mean, you know, as everyone knows, the longtime listeners of the show know, I am all for having music cost a quarter a track, 50 cents a track at the most. But bringing the non-crippled music down to 99 cents a track is a step in the right direction and one that makes me very, very happy.
And I agree with you there. It's fantastic. And it's going to make it a lot easier for people, for customers, when they go to the iTunes Store, to be able to pick out tracks and not have to worry about, well, what's the difference between iTunes and iTunes Plus? And, you know, for me and you, we deal with this day in and day out. We get what it is. But let's say my mom went to the iTunes Store. She might not. Now she doesn't have to worry about it. Everything's 99 cents again.
Yep, good stuff, good stuff. Makes me happy, makes me happy. It's a good step. Let's move on to the Greenpeace and California lawsuit.
You know, when I read the Greenpeace report when it came out, I was looking at this thing and I'm going, okay, so I can see some points in here where maybe Apple can tighten up their production a little bit, but then they're completely within their own guidelines and within the European regulations, which are pretty strict. So why pick on Apple?
Yeah. I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Just because they're within regulations does not mean they're where they need to be. Look at the ridiculous environmental lack of regulations, the deregulation that we've had in this country during the last 8 years, where most of the environmental protections have been stripped away from existence, and where the environment is largely regulated, or environmental regulation is largely managed by industry cronies who's are doing everything they can to make it more business friendly.
Sure, and that's totally valid. And so in that respect, it's a really good thing that we have industry watchdog groups out there to pick up the slack that the government is playing out. So,
but that said, so I was playing devil's advocate there.
Right, so now you can jump back to the other side of the fence.
Just because the iPhone falls within a particular set of regulations does not necessarily mean that it is the product that it should be in terms of the environment. But Greenpeace is clearly still looking to garner headlines by targeting Apple. I don't know enough about this particular topic, Jeff. I don't think either one of us do, to know whether or not they're making mountains out of molehills. But I do think, I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but they're trying to get headlines for themselves by attacking the company that has all the headlines.
I have to agree with you on that. And I'm totally fine with Greenpeace or any other organization dismantling, dissecting an iPhone or any other product.
Absolutely. Someone needs to be doing it. I mean,
right.
Someone needs to be spending this effort to find out if these products that are, especially popular products, are harming us.
Right. The thing that gets me is that, I have to wonder how much of what Greenpeace did with the iPhone was really for the consumers and how much of it was for Greenpeace, because I don't remember ever seeing a study coming out from Greenpeace, say, on Motorola's Razr phone when it came out, and it was...
Yeah, but are we looking for that?
No.
No, we're not looking for that, so that might have come out.
Well, actually, let me take that back. I went back and looked through Greenpeace's website, and if there is an article about a specific Motorola or Nokia phone, I couldn't find it.
I see. I didn't realize that. Well, see, dude, that's why you rock.
Someone's got to go out and look for this stuff, so I guess it might as well be me.
It might as well be you, because I'm probably not going to do it right now.
Well, there you go. So I'll go do it.
No, well, so that's a good point, and that comes back to what I'm saying, is that the Greenpeace is looking to get headlines by attacking the company that's getting headlines. And, to me, they'd have a lot more credibility if they made a big deal about Apple falling within, say, Europe's guidelines, the EU's guidelines. And then if they said, but even, and therefore the guidelines are not appropriate because there's this chemical that's not a problem according to the guidelines, but in actuality it can cause these problems.
That would have been a much better spin on their whole study that they did on the iPhone.
Absolutely, it would have given it more credibility to me, and I'm sure to a lot of people, and it would have been more fair, in my opinion. Again, I'm not going to claim to be an expert in environmental regulations, and I'm not going to claim to be an expert on chemistry, they do keep coming after Apple in what appears to me to be sort of stretched kind of ways.
Yeah, it really feels like that to me too.
And as for the California, what is the environmental? What's the name of the thing?
Center for Environmental Health.
That's the one. I bet their lawsuit goes nowhere. That's what I'm guessing.
I don't know enough about California law because I don't live there, so I can't say for certain. But my gut feeling is that this lawsuit will not amount to anything. However, if Proposition 65, as I recall,
yep, yep,
has guidelines that are specific enough that they can show that Apple has not actually complied with the laws, okay, I can see some changes happening on Apple's end, which will probably be a sticker goes on the boxes until they get the printing caught up.
That's the most that'll come out of this.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about recalling all the iPhones, what?
Yeah, that's just a you know, we're asking for you know, a ton of gold so that we can hope to get an ounce of silver kind of thing.
Sure.
And it may actually result in these chemicals being removed from the headphones. I mean, you know, again, you know, I'm glad that someone's looking out. If there is a chemical that's going in headphones and it's and it needs to not be there, well, yeah, get it out.
You know, one thing that I would like to see these groups do, if they're really going to actively pursue making sure that all these products are safe for us, instead of just focusing on Apple, go and look at the companies that are making all these third-party headphones for the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that would be great because I don't use Apple's earbuds. They don't fit my ears. I find them horribly uncomfortable. It doesn't matter how they sound. They just simply don't fit in my head. So I've always used earphones from other companies. So check those out for me, people. Hop on it.
Indeed. Let's move on to our Chucklehead Award.
You know, when I read this whole lawsuit thing from Mr. Bitton, maybe it's if I use Brian French, Bitton. I was kind of at a loss because I was certain that I had misread the information. And how many times do I say that anymore? A lot, which just goes to show how nuts this whole lawsuit thing against Apple is getting.
Yeah, and it's kind of a drag because the importance, the majesty of the Chucklehead Award is being devalued by all these chuckleheads.
I know. Everyone is completely diluting the product value and product name of Chucklehead.
I know. That's just not even fair at all. Nonetheless, this guy is suing Apple because the product matches what the advertising is. Because, again, they put on their packaging, dude, 8 gigs of capacity really equals, you know, 7.45 gigs of actual use. And, you know, the same people who don't get that, and there certainly are plenty of people who aren't geeks who don't get the issue, don't understand that it's an issue of not only calling 1,000 megs a gig when it's really 1,024. It's that plus the way data actually gets written that ends up causing the formatted capacity of any particular storage device to be smaller than its theoretical physical maximum.
Right, and you have to format the data storage device so that you can put other information on there. Without a format, the computer that runs or that accesses it, whether it's a Mac, a PowerBook, an iPod, it doesn't matter. If the storage media is not formatted, the device doesn't know how to access any information off of there.
Right, and it's the formatting process that eats up that extra capacity. At least as I understand it, there may be some other issues, and you know, anyone out there is welcome to educate us further on the issue if need be. But those same people that don't understand that, which is certainly a lot of people, don't care.
Right. That's absolutely right. Now, another thing, if you're going to go after someone for the actual capacity versus advertised capacity of a device, why are you going after a company like Apple? And why aren't you including other companies, say like Dell or HP or
Well, that lawsuit
Sun.
Has already took place. It was a couple of years ago, if I remember correctly. Someone, and I forget who it was, sued hard drive manufacturers and computer manufacturers for this exact same issue. And I don't think anything ever became of that. I mean, I certainly haven't heard of that lawsuit since. And you know, we probably wouldn't have even heard of this lawsuit again if it didn't actually involve Apple.
Right.
I mean, he's a law student. He's obviously a kid, and he's a numbnut. That's just it. He's a numbnut. I mean, this is just, I mean, like, are you freaking kidding me? Now, there may be some esoteric aspect of Canadian law that allows this lawsuit to go forward, but give me a freaking break. When Apple is telling you on the packaging, when Apple is telling you on its website, if you don't get it, you're just too
fracking
stupid. Did I actually say that?
I think you just did.
I just used the F word. Well, so I'm probably going to, like, go back later and edit that, and you will have heard the edited version, but that actually kind of got my goat there a little bit. Anyway, the point is, just Mr. Baton, good luck. Good luck in your pursuit of a law degree. That's all I'm saying.
You know, if this was a video podcast, everyone could see me shaking my head in disbelief.
Indeed. All righty. Well, shall we talk about the iPhone apps?
Yeah, I think that we should banter that around a bit.
All right. So here's what I think. I think that Apple has had this contingency in place for a long time. Hasn't had any resources developed or dedicated to it, or hasn't had enough resources dedicated to it, that the brouhaha raised it to the fore to set the plan in motion. Either that, or of course they actually said, "Okay, I guess we have to do this after all." One of those two things is the truth.
Yeah. Now, my guess is that Apple had planned on making applications available, but that they had decided initially that they weren't going to be able to get the SDK out and have the security levels that they wanted. So they put a spin on it and said, hey, web apps, yeah, this is the way to go. And in the meantime, they had other people working on the real issue of getting real applications available. And yeah, and then I think they had to escalate the whole process because this whole hacker community just totally blossomed and showed what the iPhone can do, and Apple really had to step up and make it work.
And to which I will say to Apple, assuming let's actually pretend, not pretend, but let's just for the sake of argument say that your position or that your thoughts on this are correct. I say to Apple, cry me a river. I mean, this whether or not Apple had this plan in place and didn't have the resources dedicated to it yet, or whether or not they decided that they were just going to have to do it anyway. If Apple had been upfront about its plans and had a roadmap for this product, there would never have been any controversy to begin with.
You're right. And how many times in the past have we said, if Apple had only been upfront and told us what they were planning?
Yeah, this is an aspect of Steve's, you know, obsession with secrecy and controlling the message. You know, I mean, yeah, Apple, one reason why Apple has a lot of problems in the corporate world is because the company doesn't provide a roadmap at all to anyone.
You're absolutely right. That's a serious problem in the corporate world.
It's a very serious problem because, you know, a lot of times the idiots running IT departments in the corporate world, nothing personal, guys,
yeah, there's got to be some smart IT people out there.
Oh, I'm sure there are some very, very smart IT people out there. But nonetheless,
but then there's some
a lot of folks are looking. They're planning 6 months, a year out, 2 years out.
Right.
Microsoft does a great job of providing a roadmap. Dell provides a roadmap. Intel provides a roadmap. AMD, was that what they're called? AMD. AMD
right.
provides a roadmap. That's one of the many reasons why Apple hasn't done as well in the corporate world, and this is, I mean, you know, it's getting the Apple is becoming a big company. They are a big deal now.
Have you been, just on a side note, have you been watching Apple's market cap? Just to give people an idea how big they're getting.
Yeah, it's out of control. Actually, it's completely out of control.
Yeah, I mean, compared to Dell. A couple days ago was around $62 billion, I think, and Apple was up a little over $150 billion.
That's completely insane.
And for comparison, I think IBM is around $157 billion. That's just insane. So that's how big they are.
They are a big deal, and they are becoming a big deal, not just in terms of their market cap, but also in terms of their real world size. And a part of having that real world size is this, you know, everything that they're doing is being put under the microscope, and you know, I'm glad. my guess is that Steve would have preferred to wait to announce this SDK until Macworld at the earliest.
Right. I think you're right. And I think he would have liked to have held it until Developers Conference. Just because he has his target market.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a good point. That may well have happened. But, you know, in reality, Apple should have been showing this off at the last Developers Conference.
I agree. They should have. And Apple my turn.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apple is now in a position where they really do have to evaluate how they are presenting their products and when they let people know about what's coming up. The whole thing with keeping it so secret that the employees don't know what's under the black plastic wrapped crates in the back of their store. I mean that's crazy. I mean, we're to the point now where Apple can't get away with that. Well, they can do that for some things, but when you're dealing with the corporate world, they need to give people a lead so they know what's coming down the road so they can plan for purchasing. I totally love the surprise, the excitement of being there at Macworld Expo, sitting in the Moscone Center as Steve Jobs says, "Oh, and one more thing," and we all flip because it's something so cool and no one saw it coming. I love that, and I don't want to lose that. But Apple needs to temper that with giving IT departments and enterprise-level companies a roadmap that they can work with.
Well, I didn't mean to actually sidetrack that particular conversation to the IT world. The IT world is not the group that's been upset. That's not been the cause of the negative headlines when it comes to the update that brick phones and, you know, the whole hacker community to begin with.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about iPhone apps, weren't we?
Yeah, we were talking about iPhone apps, and I was just using that as an example. But, you know,
it turned out to be a great topic.
It is a good topic. But that said, this is the kind of case. Yeah, keeping the iPhone secret, good. Keeping the iPhone roadmap once it's been announced and released, not good.
There you go.
You know, not letting us know that an SDK was coming. If this has been planned all along, they should have announced it, especially when there was so much obvious interest. Apple would have been well within its rights to say, look, we're going to be releasing updates that are going to brick your iPhones, that could brick your iPhones, because we have an SDK coming out. Once the SDK comes out, we'll be behind the developer community. You know, they would have been well within their rights to do that. But as it is, they got a bunch of unnecessary attention. They did the negative attention that they didn't need to have.
Yeah.
It was preventable.
Yeah. And I'm sure they would have had some negative publicity from people saying, well, then just give us the SDK now. But, you know, that it wouldn't have been as big of a deal as what we've experienced.
Indeed. All right. Well, we're already running over. So let's move on to the request line, eh?
Okay.
With all the buffoonery in the world of iPhones, we were delightedly surprised to have the questions that were sent to us this week and asked of us center around Leopard. Yay!
Hooray.
Should I buy it now? Should I wait for an update or two? Is it ready for prime time? Will it run on my, you know, whatever PowerPC Mac? Will it run on my TAM? What will the giveaway t-shirts, Leopard t-shirts look like? So let's actually talk about that in the request line.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah, I actually, by the way, did have someone ask me if I'd heard any rumors on what the giveaway Leopard t-shirts were going to look like. Like, seriously, dude? I don't know. Yeah. Hold on. Pause.
Oh.
So, in any event, Leopard is going to run on. Do you have the exact list of which Power Macs Leopard's going to run on?
You need to have an 867 megahertz or faster G4 computer,
which is pretty modest.
Which is pretty modest. It means that you'll be able to run it on later model iBooks. And you'll also be able to run it on like mid-era PowerBook G4s on up through the end. And then, of course, on all of the Intel-based Macs.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's going to shine, is on the Intel-based Macs.
Right. From what I understand, just, you know, from things that I've picked up on the interwebs and being in the right place at the right time, it sounds like that the speed improvements on an Intel-based Mac are going to be stunning, and the speed improvements on a G4 Mac are going to be really impressive.
Oh, that's good. That's good. The really interesting thing to me is that I had been hearing, the actual rumors that I was hearing, the scuttlebutt even, was that Leopard was seen to be way behind and wasn't ready for prime time. And then since then, now everyone is just saying, nope, good to go. Ship.
Yeah. You know, I was hearing some of the same rumors, and now hearing the rumors that people are saying, nope, it's ready to go. I'm really excited about that, because I was a bit worried about whether or not I was going to have to run a test machine for Leopard and continue using Tiger as my primary machine. And I'm actually feeling comfortable now with installing Leopard on Friday when it comes out.
Yeah, actually I am too, and I will probably do just that and be very excited about it to boot.
Yes, I'm excited about it as well. Now, about the TAMs,
mm-hmm.
Well...
No. No, it's not going to run out of the TAM.
It's so not going to run out of TAM.
And the TAM is still going to be insanely noisy and still looking incredibly cool as long as it's turned off.
Right.
It's funny, by the way. I've got two TAMs.
Really?
I've got two TAMs that I need to sell. So anyone wants to buy a TAM, send me a note, awr@macobserver.com. They supposedly came from Jonathan Ive's personal stock of these things that he gave to an engineer or something to that effect. I don't really know what the truth is.
Okay, but, and for people that don't know what TAM means, would you like to...
Oh, yes. The 20th anniversary Mac. It looked like something out of Star Trek back in 1990...
Something.
What? When did the one? It didn't come out. It should have technically have come out in 1984 if it was a 20th anniversary Mac. But
it was 20th anniversary of Apple, not 20th anniversary of Mac.
Oh, of course. Duh. Yeah. Duh. Of course. Boy.
Oh, wait.
It's like I'm retarded. nonetheless, it's a just a it was came out in 1997. It's one of the last products to come out under Gill. They were really cool. They had these the subwoofer system that was really cool.
Made by Bose, as I recall.
It was made by Bose. Worked as a TV, which actually does work as a TV. I actually used it for a TV for a little while, but the darn thing is noisy. But boy, man, the funny thing is that if Apple released that. Now, if any other company besides Apple released that unit today, people would be going, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it does still look cool. And it looks better than a lot of the computers that just PC makers, Dell, Gateway, whoever, are cranking out. It's still a cool-looking machine.
If you want to see any pictures of it, look up TAM on the interwebs and... You'll find some picture. Actually, go to eBay. There's often one or two for sale there. Anyway, be that as it may, I do have two I want to sell, and I didn't intend to turn this into an infomercial. Leopard is not going to run on your TAM, and it. I would definitely say that Leopard is good enough to buy when it comes out, and buy it, enjoy it.
Yeah, and I will be installing it on Friday the 26th. So we'll see how that works. And about the Leopard t-shirts, my guess is that they're all going to be those half t-shirts that show your whole tummy.
Oh, man. Oh, that picture me in one.
No.
In my case, it'd be a quarter t-shirt. All right, I think I hear the listener comment coming up.
Okay, and in our listener comments, a guest clarified an issue that we talked about last week, namely why Apple is going to offer an unlocked version of the iPhone in France. To wit, our guest said, the current issue is that in France, a law that protects customers for having a phone packed with a forced operator. The French law says after 6 months, the iPhone must be unlockable. It is not like in the United States.
Right, and I think French is probably this gentleman's or this lady's first language, and which is why the English might not have sounded correct, and that's okay. We get the gist. Thank you for the comment. We actually did mention that in the news, but I thought it was worth mentioning in the listener comments that little clarification.
Right, so thanks for keeping on top of the articles and filling in the little blanks for us.
Yeah, I'll be very interested to see, by the way, if Apple doesn't see a lot of these unlocked phones make their way into... I would be stunned if Apple didn't see a lot of these unlocked phones make their way into other markets.
Oh, I'm sure they will. And
yeah, exactly.
Even though people undoubtedly will have to pay a premium for the unlocked phone, they will gladly do it. And yeah.
I don't think they're going to be at a premium.
Really? Well.
No, I would be surprised if Apple could charge a premium for them. Under the French law.
Oh, well, okay. Someone that knows French law, let us know.
Yeah, definitely. Let us know.
Yeah. And
all right, take us out.
I think I will. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness.
Indeed.
And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com, and thanks a lot, folks.